Hello there, this is John Coleshaw, and I'm just slightly borrowing the voice of John Pertwee for a moment. I don't know, maybe a regeneration might happen. Yes, it happened there. Yes, and you're listening to The Sirens of Audio. Wonderful chaps. Both of them.
You are now travelling through time and space.
G'day audiophiles and welcome to the Sirens of Audio, the podcast that explores the universe of Doctor Who and the audio medium. My name's Dwayne and my co-host Philip will be joining us very shortly. Today we're joined by Yasmin Bannerman, who first came to the attention of Doctor Who fans when she appeared in the second episode of the 2005 Revive series as Jabe alongside Christopher Eccleston. Before that she'd appeared in Red Dwarf and since she's appeared in Torchwood on television and in various roles for Big Finish, including Seventh Doctor companion Roz and Dana in Blake 7. Her first role for Big Finish was in the 2008 story The Bride of Peladon, featuring Peter Davison as the Fifth Doctor. Here's a trailer for that story, and we'll be right back with Yasmin after this.
Great Agador, dark beast of our ancestors. Hear my words, I pray. From out of the mists of legend, a man has returned to help us.
Doctor, what was that?
Whatever it was, it didn't sound good.
This is Ambassador Sixlia. My ship has been attacked. I require urgent assistance.
The Doctor has always been a friend to Peladon.
I don't doubt it, but history teaches us that death travels with the Doctor.
I need manual control, and I need it now.
If he resists arrest, kill him.
Everyone, strap yourselves down.
We're going to crash! Doctor!
Soon we will meet. Soon you will face your destiny.
It's my great pleasure today to welcome our special guest. I'm all the way from Berlin, Germany, Yasmin Bannerman. Thank you, Yasmin, for joining us.
Hello, hello. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we are thrilled to have you. You're one of those special people who made a transition from the show first and then into audios. And you've had a huge contribution. So I look forward to hearing about some of that. But can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and maybe how did you get into acting?
So I was born in London, but grew up in Gloucestershire and then came back to London when I began my studies, went to uni and began my studies at drama school. And I kind of got into acting in the childhood ways where you have go to school and there are plays and that sort of thing and after school clubs, that sort of thing. So I always had an interest in performing, which was fostered, fortunately for me, by my school. And so that's how I sort of, you know, had it as an interest and then decided with the whole sort of A-levels, what am I going to do with my life? Encouraged by my father to actually go to drama school, really pursue it and think about making it a profession. So that's really how I ended up acting.
It's great you're encouraged by your father. Often parents don't encourage their children to become actors. What did your parents do?
Well, my father was in property and business. And my mother's midwife. And I must admit, I did think when I was sort of 18 and I was doing the usual plays and I'd done National Youth Theatre and I was performing out of school as in sort of hobby kind of way. I had thought I needed to do something practical, like become a teacher. So I was just thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to need to get my maths for this because, oh my goodness, I'm spectacularly awful at maths. I was thinking practically that would be a sensible thing to do. I never really thought seriously about going into acting just because there were so few role models in terms of Black actors. It just, to me, it just didn't seem, I just never considered it. And it was actually my father who said, wait a second, this is this thing that you love to do. Why are you not thinking about pursuing that? And I just thought, that just sounds like craziness to me. And he said, I remember him saying, listen, whatever you choose to do, you have to get up every morning at whatever o'clock, and you've got to go and do that all day and come home, day in, day out, year in, year out. So pick something you love. Don't look at the limitations. Pick the thing you love and aim for that. And that's what made me decide to go and audition for drama schools and really go after it. I never thought about it that way before. And that kind of changed the trajectory of my life.
So what was it about acting that you loved?
I think it's a strange thing. I was born shy. And I'm sure a lot of people will take issue with that and say, no one's born shy. But I was, from my earliest days, I can remember being very, very shy and introverted. And I still have this early memory of this uncle of mine, Uncle Braff, who's such a sweetheart. And he used to have all the children around him in the circle. He'd play with us and do little games with us. And he used to say, come on, Yasmin, do your dance. I literally stand there and bend my knees 3 times. That's all I did with my head down. And then he'd be like, yes! I'm sure that comes into it somewhere, this kind of thing, this little performance thing that I liked to do and made me feel a bit happy. But then especially starting at school, we had choir, which I love to do. I love to sing, and I was one of those people, like many people, you sing and nobody hears you, and sort of being encouraged in all of that, and you know, stepping into performance and it not needing to be me and my shy self, being able to take on a persona or just perform the material and step out of myself, I just loved it. I just loved it. It just brought something out of me that was blissful and wonderful and creative and, oh, just gorgeous. And I just wanted to live in that experience all the time, or as much as possible. And in that way, I was very, very lucky. I've heard things are changing in the UK, sadly now, in terms of funding for the arts. And that's also starting in schools. But when I was at school, the school that I went to, things like sports and art and drama were very, very much fostered and encouraged. So there were so many opportunities to just have a go and be part of something. And it was wonderful. And I'm so grateful for that. I never really appreciated it until now, but you never know what you've got till it's gone, in a sense. And then I think all of those things, having a school that gave everyone the opportunity to shine at some, has been amazing. And that I'm sure that that's made and informed what I went on to do greatly.
Can I just pick up on something that you mentioned earlier, that you said that it was difficult to find Black role models in acting? Mm-hmm. One actor that I want to pick up on is Josette Simon. Had she crossed your path, or had she come to your attention during your years growing up? Had you noticed her?
She was my hero. Absolutely. Absolutely. At the time, when I was growing up, racism was kind of family friendly. We had the most racist shows that were like family viewing. And I would dread going into school the next day and then and hearing these sort of horrible racist funny jokes that people would want to try out on me from that Saturday night's entertainment. And there were very, very few black actors. There was so little representation. And so, oh my goodness, even if there was a little, even if it was 2 seconds, even if it was a tiny part on a show that mattered, it was all so incredibly valued and we wanted it and needed it and cried out for it. So when Josette Simon was in Blake 7, it was a revelation. It was incredible. Just being there at all was huge. And then on top of that, she played this kick-ass character that was just so unbelievably cool. Even just for, forget about being black for a moment, just being a woman, that role. I mean, she was awesome. She was this munitions expert and she was fierce. She was so courageous and she was young and she was feisty and she was so smart. And she was a revelation. She was an absolute revelation. And then especially looking to America, there was more black representation, but it was almost also as acceptably black as one could get at the time. So very, very fair skinned and valuable and beautiful and black. And that was great. But Josette was also, she was dark like me, like a dark girl with short hair. She was like as un-European as you can get. And she was beautiful and she was amazing. And I just could not get over her. I couldn't get enough of her. And I got to see lots of her. She wouldn't just sort of walk through frame and kind of be there. She was there. She was like a main character and it was awesome. It blew me away and I loved her. I absolutely loved her.
We've had both Sally Levette and Jan Chappell on our podcast and both of them talk about the fact that they didn't feel that as female characters they got to progress very far. It's amazing when Josette hit the screen in the third season, she was just given so much strong work to do and just carried off. And she was, I think she was only 20, 21 at the time. So it was a pretty amazing performance.
So young. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, she was incredible. That was fantastic writing. I loved it. And so for a girl like me, it was quite pretty life-changing.
How hard has it been then in terms of drama school? I mean, she was the star of the model. As you say, I mean, the shows like Love Thy Neighbour and those horrendously racist shows that at the time. Just accepted. Do you feel like has it changed? Have things changed now? I mean, they're getting better, or are they where they should be yet? How was drama school? How was your career in terms of being a black woman?
Well, do you know what? My expectations were pretty low just because of what I'd experienced. Because, of course, you know, growing up and especially where I grew up, there weren't a lot of black people. It's changed now, but when I was growing up, there weren't a lot of black people around me. I was born in London, but we moved very quickly out of London, which is very multicultural and always has been, to the countryside, effectively. And so I encountered racism and plenty of it. So I wasn't expecting it to be any different in my career. So I was actually very pleasantly surprised that I did not encounter a lot of racism in my career. And I know a lot of people that have and have been around them while they were, or at least heard their accounts. But I didn't actually have that experience. Now, it may be that I wasn't privy to many roles that I would have been. Knows, but in terms of especially comparing myself with my friends who were white and British, or you know, or at least white wherever they were from in the world, I didn't have a tough time of it. in terms of my career path and what I was being offered and the kind of roles I was being offered, I didn't actually experience that. I also didn't experience a lot of terrible stereotypical roles that were hard to do. I was very, very fortunate in that sense. So I cannot complain about any, and I personally can't complain about it, but I know that there's a lot of it, racism and sexism. I know that there's a lot of that, yeah.
I was gonna say, has it been harder being a woman or harder being black in terms of roles?
For me personally, I'd say probably being a woman, just in terms of what is written. And I think things are a lot better now, because, you know, I'm an old bird, and you know, we're going back a long way in terms of what was on the table, and I think that that has changed quite dramatically. But probably in terms of what was being offered, probably for me at the time, being a woman was probably, you know, and even within that, you know, I did quite well out of it in terms of what I was being offered.
So once you left drama school, what was your sort of career path? I mean, the way I'm heading for Doctor Who naturally, but just yeah. what were some of the things you did between drama school?
So when I first left drama school, I did the, I mean, the thing is, you just go up for everything. And so I think my very first job was a commercial. I think my very first job was a commercial for Alpen cereal. and that nice. And it's not usually that well paid. So it was lovely having this commercial, because back in the day you used to get such lovely things as repeat fees. So you could actually live off your commercial for a while. So it was, you know, it was what I could get at the time. I went up for a lot of auditions, had a very good agent who was very encouraging. And so, yes, yeah, so it was commercials and theatre and that sort of thing. But very, very quickly, it didn't feel like quickly, but not long after, I got my first TV role, sort of major TV role on a show called Hollyoaks, which I believe is still going. And it was, we were sort of the original cast for that show. It was all very new in for Mercy Television. And so that was the beginning of things.
Now, that's for about 2 years, wasn't you on that for?
Yeah, yes, that was for a couple of years. And on the very tail end of that, I had my son. Was still in very much interested in acting, but was sort of looking to spend more time with him and not running quite so hard after everything. Still ambitious, but in a slightly different way. But yeah.
So you did lots of different bits and pieces of television after that, lots of different shows. Like, yeah, your list is very big.
bit of everything.
But can I jump in there? Yeah. One show that I saw you in that I really loved is Red Dwarf. Do you have any memories of being there? I think the season you were on, they weren't doing studio recording or live audience recordings anymore at that stage.
I wasn't even aware that they did. I loved the show, and it's a tiny little part. It's a blink and you'd miss me part, and it was remember rightly, I think it was like a green screen type thing. I was kind of sat on my own. So I didn't actually meet the cast. And which was,
yeah, I was gonna say, did you get to see Danny do the little dance that you were supposedly watching?
No, I didn't get to see him do that. And I knew Danny because I worked with Danny on my first professional play. It was Playboy of the West Indies, which we toured. And he was in that, so I knew him, but I didn't get to see him on the show.
So you've done many parts, and of course, one of the parts that you're most famous for is being a tree.
Yes.
How do you end up playing Jabe in the first, you know, the remake of Doctor Who in the second story? How did that part come along?
Oh, my goodness. Well, like all the parts, and for everything, whether it's a commercial or a voiceover or whatever, I mean, your agent just has auditions for you and you go up for them. And I remember going up for this Doctor Who thing and I thought, Doctor Who, yes, because I used to watch it when I was little. And I just remember my first Doctor was Tom Baker. And I was terrified of Doctor Who at that time when I was little. I remember my brother and I used to, my brother used to sit on the sofa and I used to start behind the sofa because I was just waiting for the Daleks to come out and they terrified me. And then a few minutes in, my brother would be behind the sofa with me watching. And I just thought, oh, wow. It's that show. And I just thought, gosh, no one's going to watch that. it'll never catch on. This new generation, nobody. I wasn't aware of Doctor Who as something that people followed and that there were books about it and that it was this whole, I didn't have that sense. I just thought it was this old show that they wanted to remake. But I mean, you know, I'm up for anything. You know, I was never sort of, it wasn't that I wasn't selective. But in a way, I wasn't, because my agent was already selective. So I just did everything that came up. I auditioned. I had a go. So I remember the audition. And I remember getting the role and actually having a rehearsal, because that's a very rare thing for TV, or at least it was for me. We didn't usually have rehearsals, and I actually had a rehearsal for the Doctor Who, and it was lovely because we also got to discuss it, and it was Russell was there, and we just got to sort of discuss what was happening and how I was seeing what was happening and what were the implications of what was happening. So all of that was very interesting. But I do remember finding the whole thing interesting, but kind of bizarre, and thinking, yeah, no one's going to really, yeah, no one's going to watch this.
No one remembers it at all, do they? They never mention it anymore. So how long
I was right.
How long did it take to put the makeup on and do all that sort of? Because you were sort of the first person to have all those prosthetics and be a major cast.
Yes.
So you were the experiment. How did it run on you?
Yeah, that was just bizarre, actually. Because just to rewind a little bit, I saw some early sketches of what they were thinking about for my character, and what I saw was gorgeous dress and like a headpiece. I thought, I'm going to be like a beautiful woodland princess. It's going to be fabulous. And I remember going for the costume fitting. Yes, because my daughter was very little. She was something like 18 months. And I got to go along and they were all so lovely. And I had my costume fitting. And it wasn't the costume as you see it. It's they sort of make it out of this kind of lovely white material as they're just kind of getting the shape of things. So all of that was going on, and I saw some preliminary sketches about what they were thinking about for my character. So when they mentioned prosthetics, and I had no experience of prosthetics whatsoever and didn't really know anything about it, I was thinking, yes, mythical headdress thing, probably going to come up my head. And I didn't, and the penny didn't drop, even when they were saying, yes, so you're going to come along and we're going to take a mold of your face. And I was thinking, oh, this was very elaborate stuff for my headdress. And so I went along and they did the mold of my face. And it was several sittings. And then finally, the big day, they said, you know, it's going to take us, you know, many hours to do this. Still didn't clock. And then all these pieces that were coming onto my face, and they were showing me, and, you know, it all had to be glued on. And the whole process, the first time around, it took 6 hours. 6 hours. Oh my goodness. And then when I'd finished, it was kind of like, da-da, see yourself. I was horrified. I'm like, I'm a monster. Just wasn't what I was expecting, darling. I thought I was going to be beautiful. and 6 hours. And
what do you do for 6 hours?
Sit, chat. You're really, they were lovely and so interesting, and I had so many questions. Yeah, it's long. It's really long, and each piece it's glued onto your face. Really, it's the whole thing is sort of glued in bits onto your face. It's not one mask or one piece. It's lots of pieces. The whole thing is, and then afterwards, it has to be removed. Now, I know that they do self-adhesive wallpaper now, but back in the day, and probably I'm still sure they do, I haven't wallpapered anywhere since I was little and had to help my mum, who was the decorator. But you have to take this stuff off with that, what is that flat metallic thing that you have to scrape the walls with? And that's how you take off the prosthetics. It's really like a solution. It's like nail varnish remover stuff and like this thing, and you scrape it off and it takes forever. So it took, I think the first time it took 6 hours to put the whole lot on, and then it took 2 hours to take the whole lot off. And it's, whoa, it's intense. And your skin doesn't love it. It's not like a day at the spa.
So how many days of filming do you need to put it on for? How many days it was?
I'm trying to remember now. I think the whole thing we shot in the end in 2 weeks. I might have got that wrong, but I think so. And I think it was 5 days each week that was happening. It was, yeah.
How fast did they get by the end?
By the end, I think we got it down to 5 hours, four and a half, 5 hours.
Still a long time.
In the end, and an hour and a half to take it off, I think, in the end. So that was how we, so of course, each day, even though it was 2 weeks, each day's filming started very, very early for me, as you can imagine. So I was half asleep in the makeup chair while they began. Which was fine by me, because at home I had little ones. I was used to early starts. And here I got coffee and people fussing over me. I just had to sit there and close my eyes. So I didn't object. Everyone was sort of saying, oh, you know, sorry, it's really early and everything. I was thinking, no, this is great. I don't have to do anything. So, but yeah, it's a full on. The mastery, the creativity that goes into every part of it is just awesome, and just to be a part of it is incredible.
Now, you spent most of your time working closely with Chris Eccleston. I mean, the two of you had scene after scene and very powerful, important scenes for the show. Not that you understand much of it, but in terms of the whole folklore of what was to come afterwards was in your scenes. What was it like working with Chris?
Oh, amazing. He is the nicest man. He's just so down to earth and funny and lovely. I mean, I didn't know what I was expecting, because I, you know, I watched Chris and it was just like, oh my gosh, it's Christopher Eccleston. It's just like, wow. And he's just so humble and just really, really lovely man. I think when we turned up for the read-through, he bought me a little plant, which was the cutest thing. He bought me this little plant, and he was just, oh, so nice. Such a lovely guy. Just really, really beautiful to work with him. It was lovely to watch him interact with everyone, from the people who are doing the makeup to the extras. I mean, there were a lot of extras. We had a lot of really big scenes. We had the little children who were painted blue, and, you know, and he was lovely to everybody and charming to everyone and interested in everyone, which is always really, it's just beautiful to see. It really is. And it just makes for a really lovely environment where everyone is working together rather than here is the star, your position is here. None of that. It was lovely. a very, very positive experience working with him.
So a couple of years later, you got invited back to actually play a human in Torchwood. Do you remember much about that?
Oh my gosh, do I remember much about it? What I remember most about it, to be honest with you, was going on set into the incident room, I think it's called, because I was a police lady, and they have, like in a real, well, I've actually never been into a police station, into an incident room or whatever you call it, where they have the pictures of the victim and all the rest of it. But they had it set up like a real thing with the pictures. And of course, what I'm looking at has to be actors and prosthetics, but it was horrific. It was horrific. It was full on. I was fascinated and horrified at the same time. Yeah.
So you've done a lot of television, you've done quite a bit of stage work. Had you done much audio work before Big Finish?
Before Big Finish, I'd done little bits, but I think they'd been mostly like documentaries, voicing documentary type things. I'm trying to remember the sequence, but I think so. I'd always loved radio, but I'd not had much opportunity to do it. But I had done a couple of little bits, but not much at all. Big Finish was really the start of everything for me in that regard.
So how did you come to work with Big Finish? How did that happen?
It was another thing that just came up that I was offered. And I quickly realised that because being on Doctor Who is, even though I only did one episode of Doctor Who, I played this one character in one episode, but it's a little bit like rep, which used to be a thing back in the day, and it probably still does exist in some small corners, but I don't hear about it so much anymore, where you're sort of part of a company and you work together on different projects. And I think that world is a little bit like that, because Doctor Who segues very nicely into Big Finish and their productions, and it's a very sort of fluid thing. And I was invited along, and I think the very first one I did, the very first was The Bride of Peladon, where I played the Bride of Peladon, and it was with I think it was Peter Davison, that one, wasn't it? Jenny Agutter,
yes, it was.
Yeah, Phyllida Delore, that's right. And that was the very, very first. And I was so excited. It was just a dream role. And I loved the story. And I hadn't been along before. And I remember going off to Moat Studios, where that one was recorded. It was either Big Finish, it's Moat or Soundhouse, I think, almost all of them. And it was such a lovely day. It's so relaxed, because you don't have to jump into makeup. You don't have to have learned your lines or anything. You sort of come along. It's a very sort of family, laid back atmosphere. It's like something you would just want to do for fun. And I loved it. And Peter Davison was my favorite doctor, because when I was younger, I was just in love with him. When I was little, I just loved him. I was like, oh, he was so dreamy in his cricket whites. Oh my goodness. So it was so lovely to work with him, and such a wonderful script to work on. And I had a blast. And also, there's Toby's amazing food. He's done wherever I've worked, whatever set, it doesn't matter whether it's a movie or whatever, the food's kind of sort of, no offense, but pretty school dinner-ish, you know, like what? And it's gorgeous food. On top of everything, you get well fed. Oh, lovely. Loved it.
So it wasn't long before you came back to work with Colin Baker in The Fourth Wall.
Yes. And The Fourth Wall is is the most famous of all of the Big Finish productions in my household, because my daughter is obsessed with it and quotes from it on a regular basis, right? So I've heard it so many times, because I tend not to listen to things, that anything that I'm in. I just don't watch or listen to anything. But my daughter kind of had that playing on the loop, and every now and then she brings it out again, just because she loves impersonating the portions, and it's just such a, it's just wonderful. And she often refers to it as well in her analysis of, because she loves to analyze text and also movies. So yeah, she comes back to the fourth wall quite a lot. So yeah, that was wonderful again to work on. So much fun and so funny. And at the end of the day, when you finish recording everything, and then you do all the drop-in sounds that need to be, and the crowd sounds and all the rest of it, and they did a lot of the Porcians stuff at the end, and I just remember being in a booth laughing, just laughing and laughing and laughing, because it's just so hilarious and so brilliantly well done too.
Doctor Who, The Fourth Wall.
Blazes? Oh, something's interfering with the signal.
Doctor, I feel weird.
What? You're fading out.
Oh, now don't. Where am I? Not right away. Oi, don't worry, I'm coming.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the very first episode of my new TV programme, Laser.
Hey, pick on someone your own size.
I'm not leaving you.
Go, get help.
There he goes. Kill him.
Who are you?
What an unusual machine.
You're a spy and I'm calling security.
I am not a spy.
You know this man.
He calls himself a doctor.
Doctor, say.
I know. The doctor's here. He could interfere with our plans. Follow them.
Subscribers get more at bigfinish.com.
Okay, so having done a couple of, well, there were major parts, they then decided to cast you, some who I wasn't really familiar with, but people in Doctor Who folklore. Roz Forrester. So how did you get cast as Roz? Do you know what the thinking was behind that?
I don't even know. I'd done these little different parts on various Big Finish productions. I don't think I'd actually done that many at that point. And it had been over time. You know, I did The Bride of Peladon, and the next thing that I did when I did The Fourth Wall, there was quite some time between the two, and I was off doing other things. And so when I was asked how I would feel about it, I was just so incredibly flattered. And yeah, it was a gift. It was such an absolute gift. And I think at the time as well, I just sort of got to this point where I was very much less interested in doing anything in front of the screen. I'd loved radio and, you know, and voicing documentaries and that sort of thing. So I was very, very interested and very, very happy to do it, and just felt so honored to be asked. And I love working with the Big Finish. So yeah, it was a gift. It was an absolute gift from God to me. I was very, very happy.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, novel adaptations.
Who's there?
Good afternoon. Lovely weather. Looks like it might snow later.
Cold fusion.
Shall we explore?
Life here is harsh. Resources are scarce.
I thought they'd be civilized in the future.
Target acquired.
No!
Thanks to the Scientifica, this planet was one of the most harmonious in the Empire.
Yet they need a peacekeeping force.
You found yourself in the middle of a serious security incident.
You nearly collapsed.
A time disturbance. It was like being caught in a hurricane.
We wish to probe other dimensional states, to tap into dimensional energy.
My friends and I have been on this planet for 6 weeks, trying to discover exactly why the adjudicators are massing their forces here and what the Scientifica is working on.
How can I help?
That's a ray-shielded door. What's behind that?
A recent arrival. Classified research.
Heavy security for a science project. Someone here has been manipulating events ever since we arrived.
I don't recognize this man.
Oh. Hello, Adric.
It's a big machine.
It's got to be at least a kilometer high. Completely embedded in the rock.
Hello there! Don't worry, I'm the doctor.
No. No, you aren't.
Chief scientist, something's moving in there.
Enhanced audio.
What is it? What is it, Chief Scientist?
Big Finish. We love stories.
So you've worked with four different doctors, and you said that you were terrified of Tom Baker, but did you know that on this one you're on the cover with him? So you are with him in a sense. What made you step away from the wanting to work on the television screen?
Do you know what? I've always struggled with it a bit. It's the one thing that I never really felt that comfortable or confident at doing. I never sort of felt well equipped for it. And I just think over time, I think especially after having my children, I found it very hard because almost every project that I did involved being out of London. And I found it increasingly hard, especially after my daughter was born, I found it increasingly hard to leave and go off and do things. Began to find it really sort of almost traumatic, the separation. And at the same time, my love for it just really started to wane. And I just enjoyed it a lot less. I just found that I was doing it because it's what you do, but not enjoying it. And I hope that I will enjoy it again and want to go back to doing it. I was even thinking about just walking away from the whole thing, but which would have been a shame just because I do love performing and especially not in front of the camera.
So have you been doing anything on stage at all? You're just really just doing audio work now and then?
Audio work. I haven't had the opportunity for stage work, and I do wonder whether that is something that I might actually like to do again. But I really have to think long and hard about that and step into that carefully, because I loved the stage and I always felt more comfortable on stage than ever in front of the camera. I felt equipped to be on stage. I trained to be on stage, and I'd done stage work since I was little, whereas the camera was something very new. I never really completely trusted it, and I was used to playing characters, and in front of the camera I was expected to be more like what I looked like to other people, if that makes sense. And I don't know, I never really felt completely at ease or like I was doing what I felt I should be doing, if that makes sense. Yep. Whereas the stage is you get to live out this piece, this world, this story from start to finish. Not this is the first scene and then we're going to jump to the end and then we're going to do this bit in the middle and whatever, just be real, or real in a sense that the camera is going to perceive real. I found the performance on stage just so much more organic, as this evolving thing that you could step into and live. And I guess it was a bit of a feeling that I had when I was little and would bob up and down. My uncle would applaud. It was very much sort of like being in the moment of something and being able to step outside of myself. Whereas on camera, I was constantly second guessing myself. Yeah, I think that I would love to step back into that. I don't know if I'm quite brave enough to do it today, but I would definitely take pigeon steps towards that. I think that that could be really, yeah, I think that there could be something really beautiful there that I'd enjoy.
So you like to play in the true sense of the word of what a play is, actually, you know, in a character, yeah, in a situation with people playing together.
Yeah. Yeah, and the same with singing. I mean, I just always loved that. I always loved being in a choir. I loved this thing that you would create together that was kind of outside of yourself and was sort of elevated and beautiful. And yeah, that really appeals to me.
You did a number of stories as Roz Forrester. That's taking a book character and bringing a book character to life. Did you know much about the character? Did people explain the books to you? Did you read in the books? What did you do? It was just what you were given on the screen.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about Roz. I had no idea because also I just didn't have any idea about the universe of Doctor Who outside of what I'd seen on television. And I hadn't seen it all. I hadn't even seen all of the Doctors. For me, it was from Tom Baker to, you know, present day Doctor. I didn't even have a frame of reference for going in the day. It even blew my mind that Wurzel Gummidge was once the Doctor. How could that be? I love Wurzel Gummidge, by the way. So I had no idea about the world itself, and I'd never heard of Roz. So just before I had a little look on the internet, and I was given a book. I can't remember which book it was, but I was given a book to have a little look. And I must admit, when I first started off with her, I felt like I almost wasn't sure. I still didn't have a handle on what she was meant to be like completely. But fortunately, I got to know her over time and through the different scripts and through her relationships. So, I mean, that was really interesting, but I had no clue about her beforehand. I'd just never heard of her, and I'd never heard of so many characters in that universe.
And you got to play another Russell T. Davies script with Damaged Goods. So
yes, indeed. And I can't even, now I'm trying to remember what happened with Damaged Goods. Is that the one with the creature with the tentacle-like?
Yes.
Yeah.
Coming out of the body.
It's like, after a while, you do so many extraordinary scripts that you can't remember one from another by title alone. But yes, from what I can recall, it was a bit of a wild ride.
I think,
an intense one.
I think Roz has a lot more to do in some other scripts, but that was sort of the introduction of a lot of character. Now, we talked about Josette Simon earlier, and you talked about her being one of your heroes.
Yeah.
Of course, when Blake's have returned to Big Finish, Josette has politely declined not to replay Dana. She works for Big Finish. She's quite happy to work for Big Finish, but she, for whatever reason, and we're not quite sure why, has decided it's not a role she wants to return to, which is strange. I think you're right. I think it was such a pivotal role for so many people and hugely loved, but for whatever reason, she isn't happy with what happened back then. What was it like stepping into the shoes of a character that you'd known from when you were a child?
Wow. Well, firstly, I mean, I'd heard whispers that they were going, I think it was because I was being interviewed for something else. I was being interviewed for a Doctor Who, I believe. And they mentioned that, they said, because I didn't even really know all the things that Big Finish did. I didn't know that they did anything other than Doctor Who. I didn't know that they did all sorts of sci-fi. And I remember saying, oh, I wish they do, talking about, you know, my experience of sci-fi and the fact that, I didn't watch a lot of sci-fi, but as a child, I'd been just obsessed. Or whilst reviewing it, I realized, because I loved all these things. And I mentioned Blake Seven. And I said, oh, it would be so amazing if they redid Blake Seven. And then I talked about how much I loved this character, Dana. And the person who was interviewing me, I think they said they're thinking about it, but Gisette's not sure that she will do it. I think that's what they said. And at the time I was like, no, she's got to do it. I want her to reprise this role. I just love her as this character. And it was a long time after that that I was approached. And there were two things going on. One, I could not believe it. I was just like, this is just like my dream. This is my absolute dream. And on the other hand, I was like, I want to see Josette play Dana. So it was a weird thing. Just the thought of stepping into her shoes, just like, but I kind of dismissed that pretty early on, because I was thinking, do you know what? She is Dana for me. She is Dana for me. And will always be. So I'm not going to be her, because I can't. I can't be her. So I'm just going to take this character and bring to it what I see and what I feel organically. And hopefully that's going to be okay. And I just felt enormously grateful. I was so grateful that they would trust me with this role at all. And it was just like everything coming full circle. It just felt like divine providence. And I was just overwhelmed. I think it's incredible. And that the main cast, that the original cast were going to be there. All these people I just loved watching, because I truly loved them all. And so did my brothers. And we were just obsessed with this show. I mean, we were really obsessed with Blake Seven, really and truly loyal fans. We watched it from the first episode to the last. I remember, I can even still remember thinking, well, where's Blake? How can they do this without Blake? But it was just an enormous privilege, and I was really touched and just overjoyed to play this role, absolutely. And then when I came the first day I recorded, and of course then the nerves kicked in, it was just like, oh, are the main cast not going to be like, they're all made, they did this, they lived this, and like, here am I. And they were lovely. They were so lovely. They were so encouraging and generous and kind. And it was just like, my cup runneth over, really.
One of the strengths of the recast was the fact that you actually do bring a very different dynamic and strength to Dana. That it's even scripted slightly differently, but it's certainly later on, it's your voice and your tones that they're reaching for rather than Josette Simon's. And I think it actually gives an integrity to the character because of the way you play it as you. So I think that's why it's so successful.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very, very kind of you. And I must say that I've been to a couple of conventions, not a lot of conventions. And I did wonder how the fans were going to take it, because of course she's beloved. I love her. And they were just incredibly kind and generous too, and appreciative. And that was lovely. I mean, to get their stamp of approval was just like, oh.
Have you ever met Josette Simon?
No, I haven't. And I nearly did. And I was so glad that I didn't. Because here's the thing. I wouldn't be able to string a sentence together in front of that woman. I could not. She is just... Oh my goodness. I think she's just incredible. And so, like, I'm really uncool. And I can still remember I was doing one episode and Hugh Fraser was coming along. Oh my goodness, to play this character. And it's great. He is the loveliest, loveliest man. But it was the first time I was going to be working with him. I'm obsessed with Poirot. So when I came over to Berlin, especially... I mean, I just love all the Agatha Christies anyway, and I always have since I was a child. And I loved Poirot, and I loved him as Hastings in Poirot. And when I moved to Berlin the first time, I was so incredibly homesick. I just thought, what am I doing here? I hate it here. I miss London. I miss the British sense of humour. I miss everything. And so I watched the last present that I got from my father before he passed away was the box set of Poirot first episode till the last. And I watched it over and over and over again. And Hastings, I say, I just loved him. So here he was. He's playing this character, this baddie. And I think at some point I went up to him and I had to tell him how much I just loved him playing Hastings. And I was just, I blocked out exactly what I said because it was so cringeworthy. And he was just really charming and lovely about it. But I just know I was a mess. So I'm really uncool. That's what I'm saying. So I do not want to be that uncool in front of Josette Simon. I would probably end up saying, I love you. So no, I'm never going to meet her. And that's a good thing.
We'll see, maybe one day. Hugh Fraser, certainly, when they decided to cast the president of the Federation, because, you know, never in the TV show, I mean, you couldn't get a more magnificent voice, and just, the perfect voice, perfectly cold and evil, and yet charming.
Yes, exactly. Beautiful.
Yeah, we've seen Paul Darrow and Jacqueline Pierce towards the end. Both of them, got quite sick towards the end. But yet determined to keep working for the sake of the fans. What was it like working with two iconic people?
Well, here's the thing. I never actually worked with Paul face to face. He was sick, even when he wasn't doing too badly, he was elsewhere in the country. So all of his stuff was recorded at his studios. And at one point I believe we took a trip to Milton Keynes to a studio there so that we could actually record to him, with him as a cast. But he then got sick at the last minute and couldn't come. So I actually never met him.
Right.
I never met him, even though it was over such a long period of time. I never actually met him face to face.
So you had some great scenes with him. How do you manage how do you perform a scene with someone who's not there?
The stuff is pre-recorded. Or the director or another actor reads in his lines and then they're picked up when they record with him. So, yeah, I did a lot with him, but never actually in the same room. So I never met him. And with Jacqueline, I did. I met Jacqueline. I think it feels like I worked with her a lot, but I think in total, I met her about three times. We had long recording days. And I remember the first time we were recording together and it wasn't known that she had cancer. I think at the time it was just assumed that, she was just getting on a bit and, the days are long and it was just a little bit too much for her. But she was an absolute trooper. And she's so incredibly glamorous in the most wonderful old Hollywood style. She came in and she had on this thick sort of black robe, sort of dressing gown type thing. And it was just so darling. I'm ready for my close up. I loved it. She walks into the room and all eyes are on her. She's just got this presence. It was incredible. And she was very funny. She's got a very naughty sense of humour. And she loved to laugh. And it was an absolute pleasure to meet her and to work with her. She was just, wow, really just old school movie star.
I mean, apparently for the last couple of years, she only wore dressing gowns. So she just bought elaborate dressing gowns with her pajamas underneath because her view was, well, what's the point of getting dressed? Were you just going to take it off again later?
Yeah, but she wore it like it was a ball gown. I mean, she wore it. It was the coolest thing. I wanted one of those dressing gowns. I mean, it just looked like the height of glamour and sophistication. It was just like, it was. Yeah. And she was amazing.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Blake 7, The Spoils of War.
So this is what freedom looks like.
No, not freedom. This is anarchy.
You may have to remind me of the difference.
Why are we doing this, Dana? Jenna isn't here. She wasn't ever here, and this isn't our fight.
Against the Federation? I thought I was joining a band of revolutionaries. Well, here it is. Your revolution villa. This is what Blake was working towards, and you, from the moment you threw your lot in with him.
Attention, unauthorized intruders. This station is now under Federation control.
What is it you hate so much about the Federation?
Are you serious?
I want to understand. It provides for its people, creates work, maintains law and order. At least, it did.
There are better ways of doing that without using an iron fist.
You can hear this, Callie?
I can hear you. Yes.
Get out of my head.
I'm not in your head. You're in mine.
Villa Restel.
Yes?
It's been far too long, my sweetness.
Hello, Kravis.
Weapons ready. We don't know who or what might be waiting for us behind that door.
Brace yourselves!
You!
I should have guessed.
Big Finish. We love stories.
Not exactly the White Knight I'd imagined, but I suppose you'll have to do.
So, I mean, you've got lots of Blake Sevens. We don't quite know what's going to happen with Dana necessarily. And they've started rebooting some of the Blake Seven IDs by doing unusual sideways journeys.
Yeah.
Have you heard whether Dana's coming back for anything, or you're not sure?
No, I haven't heard anything at all. I actually haven't heard anything since the pandemic. I mean, it's just like when the world just went kind of crazy. It was like the pandemic has been like an episode of Doctor Who. I think that's what's happening. We're all trapped in an episode of Doctor Who. That's all. It's just like you couldn't make this stuff up. You really couldn't. I know that the Big Finish are doing, still doing a lot of work, because I've got friends who are working with them now on different doctors and that sort of thing. But they're always, business is always booming with the Big Finish. They're always working on lots of different projects. So I know that they're, you know, alive and kicking. Whether Dana's coming back, I mean, I don't know. I mean, with Paul and Jacqueline leaving us, I don't know whether that's something that they want to continue with. But I mean, if they did, have I got a call today and it was like, yes, we want to do this with Dana or with Jabe or with Jabe's ancestor, who's also part of the franchise, I would jump at it. I'd jump at anything with the Big Finish.
Of course you did, Jabe, yeah. Didn't you? You did an audio you didn't have to get dressed up for or made up for.
I didn't. Not one piece of prosthetic anything was on my face. It was delightful. But yeah, Tales from the New Forest, I think it's called. That's probably
New Earth.
New Earth, that's it. Tales from the New Earth. Yeah, did that. That was lots of fun.
But, you've done some Dorian Gray as well, if you've been around.
Yes, The Abysmal Sea. That was so much fun. That was my first, that was a two-hander. And I loved doing that. That was tremendous fun, a really good script. And I'd never listened to it. I didn't know. I mean, I'm familiar with A Picture of Dorian Gray, but I didn't know that it was something that the Big Finish were doing, or that they were doing it this way. So, you know, I was asked, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah.
Oh, he's a pretty amazing young actor, isn't he? Alexander Vlahos.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what's next for Yasmin Bannerman? What's the future hold for you? What are your hopes and dreams or plans?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm at this point where I'm sort of reviewing the situation, and I definitely, would like to do more voiceover work, and I'd love to do some more documentaries. That's one thing that I've always really enjoyed. I've done know, that sort of thing in the past. And that's definitely something I would return to. Would love to work with the Big Finish some more. You know, I know that when I did The Bride of Peladon, it was such a long time since my between The Bride of Peladon and The Fourth Wall. And so I am anticipating that at some point in the future, I will get that call, because my answer will be yes. I don't care where in the world I am. I would absolutely come back and do more of that. But yeah, I am sort of looking at things again. And there's some studio work here, because I always do a bit while I'm in Germany as well. I do work in studio over here, mainly with sort of advertising and that sort of thing. And that's all well and good and happy. I'd love to try a bit of writing, and I'm thinking about doing a bit more of that again, because that's something that I used to do and never took very seriously. So watch the space, you never know.
You talked about the repertoire environment of Doctor Who. You did one episode, that's it, we own you. You know, as long as you realise that, you know, as soon as you've done any Doctor Who, we own you from now on. And so, yeah. Project to project, that's what happens next. Yeah. Listen, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely lovely talking to you. I've loved your work. I've loved what you've brought to Big Finish. So thank you so much for your time you've done.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, Tales from New Earth.
Once there was a world called New Earth, and some of the people who lived there were humans, some were aliens, and others were cats. And in that world stood New York.
Don't you ever want something different?
How do you mean?
An escape from New York.
All I want is here.
There's so much more to see, Thorne. It's all out there waiting.
I'm telling you, Devon, things are gonna happen.
When I was elected to the Senate, I had to take extraordinary measures to make the city habitable and safe again for its new wave of occupants.
And that included striking a deal with Lux Incorporated.
It's happening again. Cover your eyes.
What?
Just do it. Do it now.
Why are you here?
I came to see Thorne's brothers and sisters. Suddenly, a thin man in a stripy suit with a shock of dark hair poked his head out from the house and said, "Put the gun away. He didn't do this. His teeth are nowhere near big enough."
So, I don't shoot him.
I've witnessed trees praying to new gods. The worshippers dancing full of energy. The scorch clearing on the other side of the valley. The light was bright.
All hail the Lux. The Lux is coming.
Oh gods, what have they done?
Big Finish. We love stories.
Thanks once again to Yasmin for joining us today on the show. Our recommendations for this week are pretty much everything you've just heard us talking about on the episode. So make sure you sign up for the Big Finish newsletter, and you may be able to snag some of these stories on special. And thank you for watching or listening to the show. Next time, we're going to be chatting with writer A.K. Benedict, who wrote one of the standout stories of 2021 for Big Finish, The Lost Resort. We'll catch you next week for that one. See you, guys.
This has been the Sirens of Audio Episode 86, Crossover Queen, with our special guest Yasmin Bannerman and your hosts Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Theme music by the Jackpot Golden Boys. Be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and your favourite podcast app. Our Facebook, Twitter and Instagram handles are all at Audio Sirens. And our website is sirensofaudio.com. And the next time you want to follow the adventures of a rebellious weapons expert, need the services of an intergalactic adjudicator, or simply want to spend some time with a tree, just search for Yasmin Bannerman on the Big Finish website. She's got you covered. In the meantime, keep listening to audio drama, because audio drama...